Welcome to That's So Romantical.
We are two sisters that love to discuss all the romantic things from books to movies and more.
We just love talking about love. Good afternoon, Heather.
Hello, Amber. Good afternoon to you.
So, it's the beginning of the new year. There's been a book that you've been reading and I've been waiting to read because it's finishing up in February, and I said, I promised you I'd start reading it at the beginning of the year. I thought, perfect, the third book comes out in February. I'll read it through, and I'll just be able to go right into the final book. Smooth transition. But I underestimated how good the book is because I read book one and two in like 2 weeks. And now I have to wait like a month until the final book comes out. But at least it's allowing me to marinate in my brain, and I can just soak it all in and focus on some of the good parts and have hopes and dreams. But anyway, so the book I wanted to talk about, we could talk about today, is The Kinder Poison. Because I know you just did a reread of it, and this is my first time reading. You've been excited for me to read it. So
I had to wait like a whole year for you.
So it's by Natalie May as the author. The Kinder Poison is the name of the title. It came out in 2020. It's a debut novel. Now concluding in 2023. So people who have read this have been on a 3-year journey with this book.
This book has been on my to read list for a while, but there was something about the cover that didn't draw me in. It sounds ridiculous, but I don't like the color purple, and the cover is purple. And so I don't know, for a long time, I had kind of seen it pop up here and there, and I was curious about it, but not curious enough to really pick it up and spend time in it. And then I did pick it up, and it was such a good read. I really, really enjoyed it. I was able to, because I had waited, I'm pretty sure the second book was either out or soon to be out, because I read them pretty close together, but then I had to wait for book three to come out. I really, really hope that this book can get a little bit more publicity, get out there, because I think it's a great young adult book. And that's another thing, too, is it's a young adult genre. So it's pretty clean. There is some kisses, a couple of kiss scenes, which actually were fabulous, I thought. There's really not any language, not really nudity. So it was, I think it's a good book for young adults.
Definitely. So the book, actually, when it came out in 2020, it was on the 2020 Goodreads Choice Awards. Mm-hmm. So it came out with great reviews, and people really loved it. So it's hit some of those lists. Now, you'll like this. Some of the lists that this book has been listed under is Villains You'll Love or Villain Love Interest. And you and I have talked about that we kind of like the villain character, or like, looks like it's going to kind of be the bad guy, but you know, there's definitely some drama with that. This book is definitely one of those. You've kind of described it as kind of morally gray character, and those are always kind of fun characters, and this one definitely has that character in it. So yeah, so we can talk about, I mean, there's two books to talk about that have been out, a lot to cover.
Well, let's say, first of all, there will be spoilers in this episode. So if you haven't read the book, I highly recommend going out to get the book, read the book in just a couple of days, and then you can come back. Actually, both books, because we'll be talking about book one and book two. We haven't read book three yet because that hasn't come out yet. But yeah, go read the books. Don't listen to anything else because I don't want there to be any spoilers, because we are going to talk about some of the high points of the book.
So book one, of course, I loved, but I loved book two better. I love it when a series gets better. And I feel like this series is one of those. Book one was great. I was so excited to go on to book two, and then book two came, and I loved it even more. About book one, what do you want to say about that?
Well, I think one of the reasons I liked this book in general was because I really like the main character, which isn't always the case for me. Sometimes the main characters, which usually the books that I read are female, it's from her point of view. They're okay. You know, there's maybe nothing that stands out to me. It's usually the love interest that interests me the most. But I feel like in this book, I really liked our main character. Her name is Zaru. And she, I thought, was really funny, very relatable. I think if we knew each other in real life, that we could be best friends. I just thought she was a super cute character, and she had a lot of cute, because you're inside of her head, and she had a lot of cute commentary about things happening to her and not the best situations. And I just thought her reactions to her situations were fun and funny. And then, of course, there's brother, kind of like brother rivals, and that's always a fun trope to throw into a book.
Now, this definitely is a fantasy. Magic plays a huge part in this book, magic or not having magic, because not everyone in the kingdom has magic. And if you don't have magic, that's really a problem in this kingdom. There's other
you're called forsaken and you're kind of kicked out.
The main character herself, she has magic, but it's considered like a low range, like a mid, because she can basically just talk to animals. And animals can read her mind, which they figure there's not much you can do with that as far as power goes. But I think it's so interesting how situations play out in the book where her ability to talk to animals is so pivotal to get her through situations of peril or to help her get ahead in this kind of competition that she mistakenly gets herself into. I could not figure out the plot. It was not predictable. And I didn't know what brother to trust and which brother was going to be, like, who's going to be the love interest. Me personally had my hopes for who, you know, because I kind of fall towards a certain kind of character.
My daughter's reading this book currently, and she was a little bit confused because we say one of the brothers is the gray character, and he does some pretty diabolical things, some pretty horrible things. And so I think she's reading it kind of confused, like, how is he the love interest if he's like doing these things that are so horrible? But I think it's one of those cases where he's just misunderstood, and he's also been sort of traumatized in his life because he never received magic. He's found a way though to I don't want to give too much away.
Maybe right, he doesn't have magic. Come to find out, he doesn't have magic. This is for the spoilers, but he's the only one that knows that. No one suspects.
Right,
the next king possibly of this of where magic lives, that he wouldn't have magic, and he doesn't have magic. But he's the only one who knows that. He's been able to fool everyone, so he lives in this constant state of paranoia.
Right. And as you learn these things, you start to sort of peel away the layers of him and see why he's done certain things that he's done. He's done some things that are inexcusable. But what I really like about the relationship between Zaro and Costa is that sort of brings out the good in him, because she herself is a very kind person. And I love that we have a character out there in the young adult world who uses kindness to get what she wants to, and she doesn't compromise, at least in this first book, she doesn't compromise her values. Now in the second book, things get interesting, but I think that's why I said the second book was so interesting, was because she starts to sort of turn into her enemy, who's Costa. She starts to make decisions that aren't kind or good, morally gray, I guess.
The whole time I was reading the book, I kept wondering, why is it called the kind or poison? Like, you think that doesn't make sense. Like, poison is usually something that's you don't want. It's something that could be destroying, destructive. And then kinder, it's almost like an oxymoron. Kinder is something that is good and you want. So the kinder poison, it's like, how does that title fit into this book? It does kind of explain the end of book one. And then end of book two, it's referenced again that how kindness kind of works, like it's like a slow poison, and like it slowly works on the person that you're like almost like inflicting kindness onto, or someone that you're showing the kindness to, it can slowly change other people around you. Book one, she's interacting with a lot of different, she's like on this journey. Mm-hmm. She's with one sibling, yeah, one brother for a while, then she's with their sister for a while, and then she's with another brother. So there's Jet is that younger brother, and Costa is the oldest brother, and then the sister's name
is Sakura.
Okay, so she's with those three people. Now, do you have like a part in book one that's like a favorite?
Do you think you can guess what my favorite part was?
Oh, well, I'm guessing the kissing scene.
So what makes that scene so good is that she's trying to escape. She's trying to get away from Costa. He has her trapped. So she's sort of like his prisoner. And so she's trying to get away. And the other person on the team, Maya, was like, "Well, you've got to kiss him, like distract him." So she had to kiss him for some whatever reason, right? And she was like, "There's no way that's going to happen." And ends up that she does end up kissing him in the tent. What I liked about it, though, was that it wasn't just a kiss. It was more like she was trying to talk to him, trying to reach to his kinder side and reason with him to let her go, to not kill her in the end. And she kind of sees his walls coming down, and then they do kiss. And then something happens, his walls come back up, and she realizes this isn't working. And so then she poisons him and leaves. So that was my favorite scene. I did like all of the scenes with her and Costa because I like the they had that tension there. And I do feel like she brought out the goodness in him that was buried really, really far down underneath. And I think she did that with all of the siblings, actually. With Jet, who would be a really good leader. He was trying, he actually wanted to leave. He didn't want to be a ruler. But she was convincing him of how great he would be. And then also with Sakira, I think that she was a good influence on her too. So I like that we have a character, and I said this before, I like that we have a character who's good and who uses kindness to help people.
I
What was your
agree.
favorite scene?
Well, that scene was really good. I did like that scene. Well, I like a scene at the very end. The reason why I like it, because there's an epilogue and you realize the scene is not as bad as it is. Like you think Costa is doing something really bad and you're like, why can't he just make good choices? Like just be a good person. Just don't. And so you get really frustrated and upset about that. And of course, she thinks that he has made this bad, really bad choice. And you do an epilogue and you realize that it might not be quite as detrimental, but then it's really tragic. So I really liked that very ending scene of everyone, almost like except for the sister, everyone coming together in a head. And it's very like high emotion, just a lot's happening. I think the ending of that book was so good and it's such a cliffhanger.
But then comes book two.
Book two, that I loved it even more. I had multiple highlights throughout the book, but not as many as you did. I thought
I
I
had a
had a lot
lot.
of highlights. You had a lot of highlights,
I
but
think though, like, because when you read a book a second time, you know what the ending is going to be. And so you can kind of pay attention to little nuances that kind of leads you down the path that you know is coming.
one thing I do like about her character, we've talked about her kindness, but she's also has kind of a she's kind of funny. And so some of the parts in the book, like maybe like chuckle and laugh, you kind of get a good spectrum of emotions. I know I highlighted some of those parts where I just kind of laughed out loud. There was one part where she's in a really bad mood.
That's when they were looking for the Odaleg, that magical creature.
Yeah, so she says, "It's unfair how beautiful it is." I think she's talking about her surroundings. She's like, "I'm in the kind of mood right now where I want everything to be dismal and ugly, just so I can be irritated about that too." And I highlight, I'm like, "That's me." I thought that was so relatable.
That was good.
So,
That was funny.
but yeah, there's just
So
good one-liners.
did you have a favorite scene in book two?
Well, again, I love the ending. That last scene
Was
it leaves the last scene it leaves you with,
the
like,
epilogue.
yeah, I like highlighted so much of that. I'm trying to think, like, earlier on. So I do like book two. There's a lot more interaction between Costa and Zaru. So I think that's why I like the book so much. But I do like the part where they are looking for that mythical creature. She has one way she thinks they should do it, and he has another way, and you're wondering, is he going to agree with her? Is he going to basically succumb to like what she wants, what she thinks is a better way? Or is he just going to like be stubborn and do what he wants to do? So them interacting and kind of like working together as a team And I really like that whole part. Anytime the like forced proximity, or like, so as I hear like only these two can go out together and do this thing, I'm like, yes, let's only have them two be together in this like emotional situation and see what happens.
Well, what I loved about it too was that he literally tried to kill her in the last book. And so her trust in him is completely broken. But I think for him, he's trying to gain that trust back. And he keeps trying to do everything he can in his power to sort of get on her good side, for her to see him in a good light. And she just refuses. She will not, absolutely will not see him in a good light. There is a point in the book where she does start to change her thinking a little bit, but then something shows up, some evidence she finds, and she's like, okay, he's a bad guy still. But I love that he keeps like he's like, I'll do everything you say. I will agree. We'll work together. We're a good team, and I love that he kept trying to build her trust. But she was,
Yes.
and she thought he was just manipulating her the whole time, but he was genuine, but for her, she couldn't
Yes.
tell.
It was hard for me because there's something, and I really liked how the author did this. As a reader, you have more information, and she does not. She has limited information, which typically with the first person, you stay in limited information as well because you're only seeing through her perspective. But because of that epilogue in book one, it shows you a scene that Zaru, the main character, doesn't know about. So she's going off the assumption that he had made a really bad decision and that basically she thought was almost unredeemable. But as a reader, you know otherwise. So there's a lot of, like, for me, there's a lot of that heartache thinking, like, oh, but Zaru, if you just knew what I know, then you would, everything would be better. So you would think that'd be really frustrating as a reader, but I actually really liked it. I mean, it was frustrating, but it also made me like really achy and just like just kind of take my heart out on the table and just,
Well, where you get those emotions is that you know something she doesn't. And so you're just like in your brain, you're like, oh, but he's real here. He's being genuine here, where she's thinking that he's being manipulative, that he's lying. And I mean, she doesn't know what he's thinking, so she doesn't know better. But as us as readers, we do, we kind of know a little bit more of the story. And so I think all those times when he was like, let's work together, I will do whatever you say. He kept agreeing to things with her for her. You just kind of start rooting for him. Whereas in the first book, I think I was uncertain about him. Was he a bad guy or not a bad guy? I liked him for sure. But I think in definitely in book two, it takes more. He becomes more of, I was more rooting for him more in book two. And I would say my favorite scenes were from book
Oh,
two.
on that, like rooting for him, you keep thinking, okay, he's turned a corner, he's turned a corner, but then he'll do something where you're like, oh no, that's not what a good guy would do. A good guy would not inflict that on this person or make her have that choice. So unfortunately, at the end of book two, he does something where he is going to basically like make her be like almost like a slave to him in some way, in a
But we
way.
know it's so interesting, though, is because she was going to do it to him. And so
True.
he says, there's a quote, I won't take the time to look it up. I think I did highlight it. But he says, like, how is it going to feel? How will you judge me knowing that I've done to you exactly what you were going to do to me? Because she was planning to make him her, I don't know, like a slave or her, like he had to obey her commands or something like that. And so he was then going to do to her.
Yeah.
Which I'd love that. I thought that was so brilliant, brilliantly done. Those twists and turns at the end, they were really good.
Okay, so tell me your favorite part.
Well, I think I've got two, and you already mentioned the epilogue in book two.
Okay.
Epilogue is in Costa's point of view, and so the whole rest of the book is in Zaru's point of view. The epilogue is his, and I absolutely loved it. I think I read it a couple of times, or at least some parts a couple of times, because I like to be in his head. But my other favorite part was, and maybe this is a trope we have to talk about, is the teach me how to fight scene. So she wants to learn how to use a sword, but the only reason why is because she needs some of his blood. And so she wants to purposely cut him with a sword to get his blood. And so I actually laughed out loud when she was holding the sword and she's like, am I holding it right? And he, you know, swings his sword and knocks her sword out. And he was like, no. Yeah.
Yes, that was a great scene. You know, him trying to teach her to, he legitimately, like genuinely was trying to teach her how to wield the sword. He's exhausted and tired. He doesn't.
And his father just died.
Yeah. And so, but he's willing. And he's like, right at this hour, you want me to like show you how to wield a sword? And you would think he would say, no, we'll do it tomorrow. But he's trying to do right by her. And you can kind of see that. So he's like, all right, fine, we'll go do it. But I do like that scene because they do end up him on top of her and pinned down. And that scene was really good too. So he like at that point is asking, like, haven't I done everything? What else can I do? Like, I'm trying to be better.
I think also, so in book one, we had the scene where she kisses him to try to be able to escape, right? In this one, he kisses her because she has found something on him. She finds this force vine or whatever it's called. And she realizes at that moment, this is the proof of the evidence that she needs that he is a shifter. And so he kisses her to distract her, and then he like takes her hand and like moves it away from the necklace that she was gonna pull on her break. And so he was actually manipulating her that time. Of course, I'm sure he wanted to kiss her, but yeah, I think there was a dual purpose there in that kiss.
So one of my favorite lines in book two, I'm going through my highlights so I'm able to remember it word for word, it's about halfway through the book. So it's her talking about Costa. And I don't really remember exactly the scene of what she says this, but she says, I'm trying to ruin him. He is trying to save me. Which is actually so much through, that says so much through the book. And she's saying that. And she, as she says that, she doesn't even know full information about, she thinks he's actually done more worse things than he really did. She thinks worse of him than he actually is. Part of me just wants to be like, just tell her that you're not as bad. Like, you didn't do all the bad things you think she did, but he doesn't. And the ending has like, I have like, I think pretty much like highlighted like the entire, almost the entire epilogue, the ending of that.
Well, of course, when he says, I am yours, and then puts his chin on her hair. Because she, yes, they kind of embrace because she needs his help. That was adorable.
Yeah, I definitely have that highlighted. Because it's from his perspective in the epilogue, you get to hear his thoughts. And so one thing that he says that I love says, if only she knew the kind of power she holds over me, even without magic. It's not because of her magic that she's controlling him or whatever, making him make the choices that he's making. It's because of who she is. Not really like a cliffhanger at the end, but you're just excited to see with them. Maybe
because she sent him off to live in the military wing, kind of like got him out of the way. But now she's coming to him for help. So we know in book three, they're going to be back together again, but there's this war looming. So I think it'll be interesting to see, because Costa basically wanted to just send out an army, kill a bunch of people. And he was trying to make the sword that could take magic. So I'm curious to see if it's going to go down that path or somewhere else. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's interesting because she was able to remove kind of like those quote-unquote demons that made him make a lot of the bad decisions that he did. She, through the power that she has, that she learned about, that she was able to accumulate, she was able to remove a lot of that darkness and demons from him. And so it kind of makes him make different choices, almost be a better person naturally. So I'm curious to see with that, what does that happen to his character and their dynamic?
I think we need another 40 minutes to talk about this, the books.
We're trying to connect two books into 20 minutes, like, or 30 minutes. That's hard. So I was just saying, like, she has removed all of the demons and kind of like the insecurities and the fear. Essentially, she removed almost that fear and paranoia that drove him to make those choices that were detrimental or selfish or whatever, kind of
Okay.
A bad guy. She removed that from him.
Okay. So my first time reading the book, I didn't catch this. I don't think I did anyway. Second time reading it, when she does pull that darkness from him, that desire to want magic so badly forced him to make these awful choices. There was a point, a line in the book that said something awakened in her. Or some, I don't know if those were the exact words, but made me wonder if she, whatever it was inside of him, is now inside of her. She said something about like a coldness opening up inside of her or something like that. I can't remember exactly. So I'm wondering if there is a part of her that also needs healing now too.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's actually like a thing that might be like a curse type of thing, or if it just kind of what naturally happens. She came from a very simple, pure life with just her dad and working with animals, kind of low status, and then got plunged into this status of power and competition and kind of maybe greed in some ways and manipulation, what people kind of do who have like power, especially if someone's the power of a kingdom, the potentially could be like the ruler, the leader of a kingdom, that kind of exposes them to some darker things, right? Because people are not as good, genuine. Sometimes they get power hungry. You know, there's something to that. And so I think I'm wondering if the more she gets into that, those scenarios in that world, it's naturally making her compromise and make those bad choices, like what Costa's been living in his entire life. He was raised in that. Or if it is, like you said, like an actual curse, other force.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I was just trying to read between the lines or something. It could be that it is just, you know, with power comes, you know, more problems and more selfishness or whatever. Or it could be that she does have something now inside of her, a darkness that's keep her from that kindness that she has.
So I have a question for you.
Go.
Just like when the first book, I was wondering, why is it titled The Kinder Poison? And then you figure out it's kinder poison because they make a reference to kindness being like a poison. And they call that, so that's why it's like that. However, I don't know quite why it's called in book two, called The Cruelest Mercy. And I wonder if you have an answer to that. Why is it called The Cruelest Mercy?
Yeah, actually, as I was reading it the second time around, I saw that there's a phrase actually in the book, a crueler or cruelest mercy. So after she and Costa have that end scene where they're just breaking each other down, you know, she's just, you know, he's trying to capture her, she was trying to capture him. It's this back and forth fight, like, literally fighting, but also emotional fights. And that's when she pulls that darkness out of him, and they're both completely spent. They have no more energy, no more strength. And basically she has the power now because she's got her influence ability. So she can make him do whatever she wants him to do. She has this power over him. And so she's thinking of either like sending him into the army as a shifter, like he wears shifter armor and becomes just basically a slave to the army. She's deciding if she should just let him go free, just tell him to leave and never come back. But what she decides to do, because she remembers how passionate he was about finding magic, the equations, like making that knife that could have the power, helping the Forsaken. She remembers like the good that he can offer and how well they worked together, how good he was with the foreign leaders and was able to convince them to, you know, join with them, make a truce or a treaty or something. So she sees all the good that he has to offer. And so she says that maybe it's a cruel mercy to keep him, because she decides ultimately to kind of keep him, but keep him tucked away. And so she's wondering if that's a cruel mercy. I think that it has kind of a dual meaning, because for her, maybe it's a cruel mercy that she's not willing to let him go. Like, giving him his freedom actually probably would be the kindest thing to do, but she still needs him for certain things. And so it's a little bit cruel to keep him on. But I think also from his perspective, like still having to be around her, to have to take orders from her, to be under her control, that's also a cruel mercy too. So,
okay.
That's why it's named. That was a really long answer for your question.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Anything else about book one or two? Any questions?
No, I'm just so excited. And I love to go reread my quotes because I feel like this author, Natalie May, she just wrote these characters so well. And the words that she used, like, because sometimes in when you're reading fantasy, it just seems like overwhelmed with description of things because it's a fantasy world and they want you to just see everything and be kind of overwhelmed by it. But I feel like she hit a really good balance between helping you to be a part of that world without bogging it down and slowing your reading progress down with too much detail. And she has lots of interactions with these characters, but at the same time, you're always begging for a little bit more. So like in the beginning, when Costa and Zaru have to go on a boat together, you know that they're on the same boat together. And so me as a reader, I'm like, oh, I want to see them interacting. I want to see them running into each other, which they sort of kind of don't. Not until after they get off the boat. But there is one scene where, like, Costa, after she gets off to safety, they're both been attacked, she gets off to safety. Costa kind of checks to make sure she's okay, and then he, like, flings his sword and walks to the other side of the boat. And, like, just this little scene that in my brain played out so beautifully. And it was just fun to see these little details where Costa's sort of aware of her. She's trying to, like she says, break him. She's trying to ruin him. Just these little scenes that pile onto one another. It just made it a really fun read, a really fun journey.
Yes, she has the ability to very in simple terms say something that emotes so much as far as a character. Like a simple, she can do like a simple gesture. And maybe it's me imprinting like how I want his character to be. It could be that. Whatever it is, I'm here for it. Like, so I like it that she's like bringing that, let my imagination and letting me kind of fill in more without her just like writing every single detail, every like over telling something. I think there's more impact. Like she was talking about Costa coming in, just standing there in his quiet, like strength presence. She was able to write that. And I thought that was so impressive. And
a good example I have it highlighted is when after she's basically pulled that darkness from him, he's kind of like, what am I now? What's left of me? He feels broken. And she's like, well, what did you ever want besides magic? And the author writes, Costa doesn't answer, but I hear the catch in his breath. I see the shift in the way he looks at me and my heart jerks. So as a reader, you get to interpret that whatever way you want to. Of course, me as a reader, I'm like, well, obviously the other thing he wanted was Zaru. So that's why he doesn't answer her. But yeah, that's kind of how she's written these. It's not obvious, like every single emotion, every single thing written down, but she leaves room for you to do your own interpretation.
When you're reading a book and there's like a love triangle or whatever, there's multiple characters and you're in the beginning, you're wondering, is she going to like this brother or is she going to like this guy or this guy? And I'm always have to be really careful that I don't like start putting all my eggs in one basket, like with the wrong character, because it's really hard for me to shift. Sometimes it naturally, I was like, I just like this character better. But then it's really hard if I like that character better and she goes with the other one. It's hard. That's happened to me before. But so I try to be like really cue in on what the author is giving me. So like I'm kind of right there along with her as a reader, as she wants me to be. And she is kind of subtle in the beginning with some of her things, because Costa clearly is like the bad guy and Jet clearly is like the good brother. But you're thinking, okay, well, it's got to be more than that. But from the beginning, she would say, Zaru would say, so Costa has blue eyes and Jet has brown eyes, but she would always say like being haunted by light eyes and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, so even when he's not around, he's still like haunting her. He's still like, she's thinking of him. She doesn't want to, but she is. So, I mean, I truly believe there's something to like just chemistry. People, you meet someone and it's just like, there's just chemistry. Mm-hmm. Isn't it? You're like, I don't know what it is.
You can't explain
it. My person connects with this person and it's just how it is. And I feel like in this book, is an example of that. Like, she just met someone, and even though he was like the more abrasive and, you know, frustrating, or like this point at that point, like almost like volatile or violent or whatever, like brother, she was still like drawn to him. Gives you clues, like this is the one where her heart kind of really is with. And when she makes things like makes her heart jerk or heart lurch, this author uses that.
Was there a point when you were like, okay, Jet's not the one? Did you know from the beginning that Costa would be the love interest?
Well, that's what I was just saying. I think she gave us those little clues. I think so. I always kind of figured, me, I'm thinking Costa is like end game somehow, because from the beginning, he's the one that's been, she just like thinks of him more. But part of me be like, well, it seems like Jet would be the smarter choice. So you never know, you know, maybe
Right.
something could happen. But I always figured, and again, maybe it's just me like hoping that it is him. But
Well,
things don't always go like book two, all of a sudden she pulls out the darkness and now he's just at her beck and call. And what does he say? He
yeah.
says, "I am yours." Like
Yeah.
that, you know, like everything's not well in the kingdom. War is pending and she needs him. But for him as a character, it's like, is he like now just a puppy dog, or is something going to happen? So in book three, which is called The Sweetest Betrayal.
Eek. Oh dear. I don't know if I like that title. Well,
So,
I'm wondering if the Jet's going to play any part in this book three, because book two, he sort of took the back seat. But it also seemed like something was going on with him because she would get these weird vibes from him. So I am kind of curious to know what's going on with Jet.
yeah,
Yeah.
Costa was sensing it too. Like, I know my brother's mad at you. Why is he mad at her? Is it because she is kind of changing? She's not being
Yeah.
that sweet, pure, kind person that she was in the beginning. He sees that. Or if there's something else to it. I was curious about that. I don't know. That word betrayal.
I know. And
She's.
it's hard because if she can use influence over Costa, there's nothing he can do. Like, does he find a way to break the influence? Does she decide to release him and not have any power of him? I don't know. He was trying really hard to figure out how to get magic with his little knife sword thingy. Maybe he is able to find a way to get magic to break the spell. And he's a shifter, and supposedly shifters have no soul. So does he find a way to become a non-shifter again? I don't know. Lots of questions.
Do you
What?
remember the part she goes,
Oh, you're
question?
thinking of the bird, the Nedessian bird of the whatever land. She goes onto that ship with her friends and she's able to ask the bird one question. And it has to be yes or no question. And her question was, do we stop Costa from becoming king?
Right. And the answer is no.
Right.
So with that, you're wondering, does Costa become king? From that, I thought Costa becomes king. But not necessarily they prevent him from being king. But my thought from that is like, that's somehow Costa becomes king. Well, Costa is not king right now. He's, you know,
Right.
slave
He's
his
like an
life.
advisor or something.
And he had an opportunity to be king. If he was king, if she let him be king, he would have been absolved. His soul would have come back and all that type of stuff. So she doesn't let him have that. But anyway, so I keep remembering that part. Like, it seems that was like one of those like little Easter egg things, like telling us that Costa will be king, or either that, or maybe it meant like she won't be trying to be against him. Like they'll be on the same team. Like they're not opposing each other anymore. They're then together. I don't know.
Well,
I
it could
just.
just be that at the very end of book three, he becomes king because they get married. It could just be the happily ever after, like I want. Okay.
Oh, it could
Oh,
be.
we just have to wait a couple more weeks and then we get to find out.
The cover has a knife spearing through, it looks like a bird type skull.
What? Let me see this.
So that knife that Costa was trying to create,
Maybe he creates it.
that might be a pivotal thing.
That is interesting, though. There is a bird on that one. And then there's a snake on the previous one with the
Crown.
crown.
Another one's a scorpion. I know why it's a scorpion.
Yeah.
Yes, so we just have to wait not much longer. If the book is going to come out on February 14th.
The fine print on there says a queen made to conquer, a victory that could cost everything.
I mean, it sounds unpromising. Betrayal and victory costing everything. It better be happily ever after. That's all I have to say after all this.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll wait and see.
I mean, the reviews so far, I mean, there's not very many of them. It's probably only the people who have had like advanced copies, but they've all given super high stars on it.
Exciting. Okay. Well,
yeah.
Have something to look forward to.
This comes out Valentine's Day. I'm like, hi, Sean. Happy Valentine's Day.
I'm going to be reading my book. I know. Same here.
I know. I saw that. I'm like, oh, well, I know what I'll be doing on Valentine's Day. I don't know what Sean will be doing.
Looking forward to it.
Talk to you later, Heather.
All right. See ya.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.